Our first speaker today is Patricia Butler. She's a self-employed policy analyst on issues of healthcare financing, delivery, and regulation. Her law degree is from UC Berkeley, and she has a doctorate in health policy from the University of Michigan. Over the last 22 years, she's worked with 14 different states on healthcare issues. Pat has served as a consultant to state legislators, to executive branch officials, and foundations, including the National Governors Association, the National Academy for State Health Policy, and the Kaiser Family Foundation. She's written over 60 publications, with the most recent focusing on the implications of federal ERISA law for state health policy and consumer rights. In her spare time, she plays chamber music, she's a small-scale beekeeper, and she skis. And being from Colorado, she's got a lot of skiing in this year. But Pat told me one thing that I must say in 14 years of conducting seminars, I have never, ever had a speaker say to me before. She said, "I'm looking forward to coming to Wisconsin in January to warm up." So let's give a warm Wisconsin welcome to Patricia Butler. Her topic today... Her topic today is, what can we learn about federal ERISA law from Maryland's court decision?
Thank you very much, Karen. Actually, when I left Colorado, it was going to be 40 degrees for the first time in 6 weeks, but I arrived in Madison and it was about 20, so it's not exactly warmer, but it certainly isn't any colder than what I've been experiencing. Yes, our topic this morning is what we can learn from the recent Maryland Court of Appeals decision related to an attempt in Maryland to expand workplace-based health coverage. And my focus is ERISA because, as you'll soon learn, it presents major obstacles to state health policymakers in trying to involve employers in covering workers or financing health coverage. So what we'll talk about today... Whoops, backwards. No. I'm not used to a clicker, so I know I'm not. It's clear I'm not an academician if I don't know how to use a clicker. So I'll start with a little bit of background on ERISA preemption and how the courts have interpreted it, and then spend a few minutes describing the Maryland law and the court decision, as well as the Massachusetts' new law, and then a few minutes on other kinds of access initiatives that have some ERISA implications. As many of you know, I'm sure, the Federal Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974 it was designed primarily to regulate pensions, which had undergone a lot of catastrophe, and the federal law primarily was concerned with removing fraud and mismanagement from the pension area. But it also applies federal standards to what are called employee welfare benefit plans, which are other fringe benefits offered through the workplace, and the primary such benefit is health coverage. ERISA applies to all plans that are offered by private sector employers or unions other than churches, but it does not apply to public sector plans. And it applies whether or the benefits are offered by insurance or self-insured by the employer, which, of course, is a very common way for employer health benefits to be offered. Both types of plans are ERISA plans. The reason that state health policymakers care about ERISA is that it has a very broad preemption provision that supersedes, in the words of the statute, laws that relate to employee benefit plans, including health plans, even if they're not in direct conflict with federal law. And this is a broader notion of preemption or federal sovereignty than traditionally under other principles of constitutional federalism. Always, if a state and a federal law are in conflict, the federal law will prevail. But in the case of ERISA, even when there is no federal law or standards directly applicable to a particular subject, the state law still is preempted. And that's a much broader notion of federal preemption. The most important exception to preemption, which is certainly relevant to health policy is that states are authorized to regulate the business of insurance. But at the same time, ERISA's preemption provisions make clear that the states cannot deem employers' self-insured plans to be insurers. And therefore, that means that the states have authority to regulate the insurance industry, and they can have an influence on ERISA plans' purchase of health insurance, but they can't directly regulate ERISA plans. In the case of health coverage, ERISA's preemption provisions apply even though there's fairly limited federal regulation of health plans. There are some standards. We can certainly talk about those. And particularly in contrast to the broad array of state insurance regulation that exists to protect consumers, particularly with respect to health care. The other important thing to understand about preemption is that it's not interpreted by the agency that administers ERISA, which is the U.S. Department of Labor, but rather is interpreted only by the courts. And the problem that causes for state health policy making is that one can never be positive about what ERISA's preemption clause means in a particular context until actually the U.S. Supreme Court has decided a case involving such a state law. And that can not only take a lot of time, but it means that one is has a good deal of uncertainty about exactly what's going to be preempted and what isn't. And that's certainly in the past been cause for states to be very hesitant about moving in the area of workplace-based health coverage. So turning then to what the courts have said, or the preemption clause means, the Supreme Court has set down two basic tests that it applies to decide whether a given state law is preempted. That is, whether the state law relates to a private union or employer-sponsored plan. The first is, does the law refer to ERISA plans? And that's either explicitly in the language or because in order to actually apply the law, you have to look at the terms of an ERISA plan. And that's pretty easy to draft around, and most states have been careful to do that. But the second test is a more challenging one, and that is whether the state law has what the court calls a connection with ERISA plans, either because it regulates in the same areas that ERISA does, it regulates health plans' benefits, structure, or administration, which is a fairly broad area of examination, or if it imposes substantial costs on plans, even if it does not directly regulate them. For the first 20 years of ERISA's existence, the U.S. Supreme Court had what many of us analysts working in the state health policy field felt was an almost a black hole of increasingly broad scope of preemption. But in 1995, in a very important case for state health policy decision-making, the Supreme Court narrowed the notion of preemption somewhat in the Travelers Insurance case, which upheld a New York hospital rate-setting law, even though it could raise ERISA health plan costs because it provided higher hospital rates to purchasers of insurance through the commercial market compared to the Blue Cross plans. And in that case, even though there were clearly going to be cost impacts, the Supreme Court said, no, ERISA's reach doesn't go that far. But those two basic questions that the courts will ask still remain, and that is, does the state law refer to or have a connection with ERISA plans? As I mentioned, the one important exception to preemption is the so-called savings clause, which allows states to regulate the business of insurance. And I'm not going to spend any time talking about the savings clause or some of its implications unless there are questions, and we can certainly discuss those later in the day as well, because I think this has a relatively small potential impact on expanding access, particularly as you already have a lot of the kinds of access-enhancing state regulations in your insurance regulatory framework already. What we do know is from specific Supreme Court cases or a few also Court of Appeals cases that there are some state law attempts to affect employer-based health coverage that the states are prohibited from implementing. The most important is that the states cannot require employers to offer health coverage. That was clear from a decision related to the Hawaii law, which is an employer mandate, which was passed about the same time as ERISA. The courts back in 1977 held that employer mandate violates ERISA, and it took another 6 years before Congress actually, with a specific amendment to ERISA, authorized the Hawaii statute. So it's unique, and it will remain so unless Congress were to amend ERISA again. Furthermore, even standards that apply if an employer offers coverage voluntarily, saying if you offer coverage, it has to include certain mandated benefits, for example, is clearly prohibited. And requiring programs like the 24-hour coverage notion that some states have explored in the past to coordinate health coverage with either auto accident or workers' comp or disability coverage would also be preempted. Last year, in 2006, the Maryland legislature enacted what they call the Fair Share Law, which required employers of over 10,000 workers to pay the state Medicaid program the difference between what they already spent on health care for their employees and 8% of their payroll. And that law actually only applied, in fact, to Walmart because it was the only large private sector employer in the state that didn't spend that much. And in July, the federal district court held that that law was preempted by ERISA. And just last week, actually last Wednesday, a week ago exactly, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld that lower court ruling on preemption. And so I just want to go very quickly through the couple of points in that decision, because the reasoning of the court is not only raises obvious questions for enacting identical laws, but also may make some other approaches that states would like to try a little more difficult. The first thing the court said was that the law was not a tax, although it was written to be a tax. It was really a mandate on employers to offer coverage. And they said that for several reasons. First, it was targeted at one employer, which had been, as you all know, the target of a number of national campaigns with respect to its health coverage. Walmart indicated that it wouldn't spend an extra 1 or 2% of its payroll to pay the state, but would feel that it was forced to expand its benefit package, which, of course, was the objective of some legislators. And some of the sponsors specifically said that that was their intention. So the court felt that in spite of how the law was drafted to look like a tax, it really was a very thinly disguised mandate to cover workers. The court also wasn't persuaded by some of the state's arguments that the way the law was drafted would have allowed Walmart to provide health benefits in ways than other than creating or expanding, in their case, an ERISA plan. The law would have allowed that 8% payroll to be spent on things like workplace clinics, contributions to health savings accounts, and other non-ERISA items. But the court said that's really not the way people get coverage through the workplace, and those approaches aren't practical, and they wouldn't amount to the kind of spending that the state was looking for. And then finally, the court looked at the ultimate purpose of the preemption clause, which is to protect multi-state employers from having conflicting laws that they have to meet when they're trying to maintain a uniform national plan. The court cited the Massachusetts law and several proposals in other states, as well as some ordinances adopted by localities that would have similar impacts to the Maryland law but be different across the country. And also mentioned that the very fact that one state would require this kind of an expenditure would force the employer to account for its individual expenditures by state, which Walmart doesn't do. I will say that there was a very heartwarming but ultimately a futile dissent by one of the three judges in the Fourth Circuit, who basically agreed that with the state that ERISA doesn't preempt this law. And for that reason, there's possibility of the state requesting a hearing by the full Fourth Circuit, but I don't think those are usually very successful. And we don't know whether this case might be appealed to the Supreme Court. It's not the best case, in my view, to be appealed to the Supreme Court, so I'm kind of hoping they don't. About the same time, Massachusetts passed a much broader health care access law that I'm sure you've all heard about, and it has a number of elements designed to essentially cover what they hope will be almost all of the residents of the state. First, it requires all residents to obtain coverage. Second, it requires employers of more than 10 workers to offer what are called cafeteria plans under the federal tax code that allow employees to buy coverage with pre-tax dollars. The penalty for failing to set up such a plan is that the employer would be liable for as much as 100% of the uncompensated care that its employees might incur in hospitals or clinics. And then finally, those employers also have to pay up to $295 per worker per year into what is the state's uncompensated care fund, and that's part of the resources that will be used to subsidize health coverage for lower income people. That payment, the assessment, would be waived if the employers, at least a quarter of the employer's workforce, are enrolled in the worker in a plan offered by through the workplace, or if the firm doesn't pay at least a third of the premium. Those are pretty low standards. Most employers would easily meet those. But the law does raise some ERISA concerns, not with the individual mandate, because there's no connection to the workplace there. The cafeteria plans probably will not raise an ERISA preemption problem, because the Department of Labor has taken the position that those plans aren't themselves ERISA plans, so a state law saying you have to provide them should not raise preemption questions. There has been no litigation about that point, but at least the state's on pretty strong grounds if it were to be challenged. However, it's the so-called fair share law that has an impermissible connection with ERISA plans, because that exemption depends on employers' contribution. So we'll see. There's certainly been strong employer support for the Massachusetts law, and it's impossible to know whether it will be challenged when it's implemented later this year. One approach that I think states actually still can take, I felt this before the Fourth Circuit case, and I think it's still a viable option, is what I would consider a broad-based pay-or-play initiative. And that's where the state creates a public program for health coverage that's financed at least partly by taxes on employers, and that the employers that actually choose to offer coverage to their workers receive a dollar-for-dollar credit against that. Assessment. I think such a program is likely to withstand an ERISA challenge as long as it's broad-based, applies to a large number of employers, not just a few, is clearly financed by these types of taxes, and the state isn't preferring that employers cover versus pay the tax. And also that the state doesn't set standards to qualify for that tax credit, like an employer contribution. There's a number of other approaches that are voluntary on the part of employers, which we can talk about later. They shouldn't actually raise major ERISA problems, but they also actually would have a fairly small impact on overall uninsurance rates. And as I mentioned, insurance regulation can certainly be helpful in keeping the insurance market stable and eliminating some erosion of the insured population, but by themselves, insurance regulations are not going to really expand access very much. ERISA does not directly affect the state's ability to adopt so-called premium assistance programs. Those are where the state Medicaid and SCHIP programs help to contribute to the cost of the premium for Medicaid and SCHIP beneficiaries who have access to their workplace coverage. Clearly, states do that across the country, but there are some problems with a smooth administration of those programs because, for example, the state can't force employers to provide information about their workers and their plans, and therefore states have had in a somewhat cumbersome fashion to have to work around those problems. And here again, we can discuss these later if you're interested in specifics. I want to close by reminding you that ERISA preemption really is a spectrum. There are a few things we know the states cannot do. For example, mandate that employers offer health coverage. But we also know that at the other end of that spectrum, there are a number of approaches such as voluntary employer opportunities, tax credits, purchasing pools, and of course the whole individual responsibility approach that really should have no ERISA implications. But in between those two poles, we have a very vast spectrum of uncertainty because, as I say, until the Supreme Court decides a case, we really don't know exactly what the parameters of ERISA preemption are. Given that, though, in terms of looking for revenue sources, here are a few potential opportunities. In the first place, you can't directly tax employer-sponsored plans. But in my view, you can tax employers. It's just as long as that tax doesn't have too strong an impact on the plan itself. You can clearly tax insurers, reinsurers, and healthcare providers. And as I say, I think a pay-or-play law that involves taxing employers but offering a credit for their spending shouldn't be preempted. But this approach is certainly being explored in states, and I'm sure we will see some litigation about it. Interestingly enough, the notion of a payroll tax to support universal public programs, even like a single payer approach, would raise ERISA problems because they're likely to eliminate the need for the employer to offer a plan, and a multi-state employer might choose to do so, which means that then the employer is paying the payroll tax as well as the cost of the coverage, and that might put the employer in an untenable position that whose costs really rise to the level of bringing preemption. I think there's some arguments to defend a law like that, but it certainly has some ERISA potential problems. For those of you who find this all terribly confusing, all I can say in closing is that you're in good company. Oh, that's right. We have questions. Sure. Thank you.
We're going to take 5 minutes of questions for Patricia Butler. The seminars are designed to give our state legislators and state secretaries an opportunity to ask questions, so I'll be calling on them first. The person at the mic is Heidi Normandin, the state coordinator and the real workhorse behind the seminars. So are there legislators and state agency people with questions? There's a couple here. Heidi? Representative Sherman.
Wall Street Journal editorialized this week that after the Maryland case, Massachusetts and Schwarzenegger were dead. You don't seem to agree.
I don't.
And after reviewing, especially the point where their decision focuses on the unique applicability to Walmart, it would seem to be quite different.
Yeah, I think they are. I think the Massachusetts law absolutely is different because it's designed to cover all employers with more than 10 workers and definitely has a much smaller impact at about $300 per worker per year. So I think Massachusetts has a better chance to overcome an ERISA challenge if one were mounted. And I'm just beginning to look at the California law. The Governor Schwarzenegger's proposal involves a 4% payroll tax, which is obviously lower, and it applies to all employers. So, yeah, I would disagree. I actually read that editorial, and I probably won't be writing them a letter, but I think you're right. I think that furthermore, of course, the Maryland case applies only in four states directly, although other federal courts obviously will be guided by that because it's the first decision on this type of an approach.
We have another question?
Yeah, I'd like to know, Tammy Baldwin and some others are trying to put through a bill that would allow states to experiment Does that help the states handle the ERISA problem?
Well, you know, I actually should have looked at the text of that. I've only seen descriptions. My impression was that those were primarily going to be grant funds to help states do some experiments. And in the past, back in the early 90s, when state health policy reform was last on the front burner, there were some proposals to provide specific exemptions for ERISA for demonstration projects. But I'm not sure whether the current proposals would do that. They should, or else states aren't going to get very far, and that would be an important input to suggest. I should say, in California, by the way, there are proposals coming out of both houses of the legislature as well. So whatever is now being put forward is probably going to be changed over the course of some negotiations. But all of them are aware of the need to deal with the ERISA concern in designing a plan. Okay?
Thank you very much, Pat.
Sure.